This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. I'm in Texas once again this morning, this time from the studios of KUT in Austin. We went from Dallas to Austin yesterday, and we're being taken care of very well down here at KUT Austin. We begin with a discussion of economics this morning. Corporate CEOs, it seems, are scared as hell, and they're not going to take it anymore. 100 of them have started a campaign to, quote, fix the debt, to do what they say is to put the U.S. economy on a sustainable path. It all has to do with that fiscal cliff you might have heard about that will have to be reckoned with next year, early next year. Actually, the 100 CEOs have told Congress and the president to make an agreement to avoid this cliff. We want to begin our discussion on this issue and some others, particularly some raised in the presidential debate earlier this week. Ed Conard, author of Unintended Consequences, Why Everything You Think You Know About the Economy Is Wrong, joins us from New York. Ed, great to have you back on the show again.
John, thank you for having me.
Timothy Noah, also here, author of The Great Divergence, America's Growing Inequality Crisis and What We Can Do About It. He's also a senior editor at The New Republic, for which he writes the TRB column. Timothy Noah, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. So both of you, is there a war, in a sense, or some serious tension between the business class in the United States right now and the political classes over this fiscal cliff issue? And is it likely to come to a real institutional showdown in the American economy come January? Ed, you begin.
Well, I'm not sure it's between business and politics. I would say it's between two views of the economy. One is whether or not you get stimulus from government spending, or whether rational expectations rule the day and the private sector dials back their spending to compensate for an increase in government spending. And I think those two views are really underlying the views that you see battling it out. Will higher taxes solve the problem, or is lower spending the answer?
Timothy Noah, how do you see this?
Well, I think actually there is an interesting divide between business and the Republican Party. There is a greater sense of urgency, I think, among a number of people in business that Republicans are playing political games with the economy. It started last year with the fight over the debt ceiling, and it continues today with the fight over the pending fiscal cliff.
Here's why I would say I don't think it's a game. If you believe that the deficit is about $1.1 trillion a year, we have plans. If the Afghan war ends, that's like $150 billion. It's offset by $150 billion a year increase in Obamacare. Raising taxes on people who earn more than $250,000 raises about $100 billion. We can run about a $200 billion a year deficit and not have debt grow as a percent of GDP. So you're left with about $800 or $900 billion a year gap that needs to be closed. That either gets closed with spending cuts, tax increases, or both. Now, if you believe that the private sector dials down in response to the increase in government spending that has occurred, a 30% increase since 2007 on flat tax revenues, then you say, look, the only solution for the government going forward is to dial down government spending. Because with $800 billion of tax increases, $900 if you include the tax increases on people earning over $250, hanging over the economy, it's no surprise that we end up with sluggish growth and high unemployment. We only raise $1.1 trillion a year of income taxes. So we're talking about enormous tax increases if we don't dial back the spending. So,
Ed, let me just get one thing clear. Do you endorse a no tax increase at all policy here to deal with this fiscal cliff?
I would say this. I believe that we would be a lot better off long term if that's the policy that we implemented.
Timothy Noah, what do you think?
Right, and that's precisely the difficulty, and that's where the game's playing comes in, is that most of the business community is realistic and sees that the solution is going to have to be a combination of tax increases and spending cuts. And this is a solution that the Republican Party is just steadfastly refusing. The Simpson-Bowles Commission proposed $3 in spending cuts for every $1 in revenue increases, which I actually think was grossly unbalanced. And even that was too much for Paul Ryan, who refused to sign on to it.
I would point out, though, that the president also refused to sign on to it as well. So I would say this. I am not impractical about what is required to solve this problem. I recognize that tax increases are probably required, because I think most people, most serious economists, recognize the following. A dollar spent is a dollar tax. It doesn't matter whether you borrow the money or not. Okay, if you spend the money, ultimately somebody has to pay for it. So would a person like myself be willing to take tax increases as a way to reduce the spending and to get the spending and the deficit under control? As a practical matter, yes. Is it the best economic policy? No.
All right, to both of you, I think we've heard a great sort of recap of a debate that's going to be very, very harrowing come January with whoever's in the White House and whoever is in the Congress. And certainly it's a little scary hearing just how far apart both of you are, because this does definitely have to be resolved or else there will be dire consequences to the U.S. economy. That's what these 100 CEOs are saying. Let's leave this issue for a moment and go to the issue of job creation, which came up in Tuesday night's presidential debates. One of our independent voters in Ohio really responded to what both candidates were saying about job creating. Who creates jobs? Listen.
My take usually is to go back and look at what the person has done rather than what they're saying. You know, there's an old joke in America, how do you tell if a politician's lying? The answer is, his lips are moving. Government doesn't create any jobs. They really don't. That's the job of the private sector. So there was a moment where Obama started talking about, we've created such and such jobs, and I thought, no, you haven't. That's false.
All right. Listen to one of our listeners who actually was reacting to Dan on the program, who responded to that.
If it was a Republican who created jobs, it would be the administration who created jobs. A Democrat is not creating jobs.
Is it all partisan? William from Miami was completely perplexed about the whole thing.
I am just completely baffled by the fact that the media, and actually including the show, seem to completely disregard Mitt Romney's statement that government does not create jobs. It seems to be the point of everyone to be talking about how the president can create jobs, and even the candidate himself admits that it is not the place of the presidency to actually create jobs in this economy.
So you're getting a taste of the confusion, I think, that is out there about who is a job creator and where do jobs come from. We're speaking with Ed Conard, who's the author of Unintended Consequences, Why Everything You Think You Know About the Economy is Wrong, and Timothy Noah, author of The Great Divergence, America's Growing Inequality Crisis and What We Can Do About It. He's also senior editor at The New Republic. This is The Takeaway. So, Ed, first of all, the president did say that there have been 5 million jobs created during his term here, and most of them, if not all of them, were created in the private sector. Do you buy this argument that government creates no jobs?
Oh, I think government policy can facilitate the creation of jobs. So I understand the point that people are making. The government doesn't create companies that employ people. It can, I think, make some investments which would help to employ people if those investments were productive. I think the government has proven to be not a very successful investor relative to the private sector. But I would agree that there are government policies. For example, I believe that when the government increases spending, the private sector dials back its consumption and investment in response to higher taxes that it sees. So I believe that if it reduces spending, it can grow. It will help facilitate the growth of the private sector. I think lower taxes on successful risk takers and investors creates incentives that produce the innovation that grow our employment. And I think that lower taxes on investors help us accumulate equity, and equity is what's used to underwrite risk, the risk of creating the next generation of innovation that will grow our economy and create more jobs, as it has for the last 20 or 30 years relative to Europe and Japan, who have tried a different alternative, higher government spending, higher taxes, and have achieved nowhere near the level of success, the level of jobs, the hours of employment, the median wages that the United States has been able to produce.
All right, Ed Conard, that's his view. Timothy Noah, what do you think about who is the job creator, and is it exclusively in the private sector?
You know, it's a semantic argument. I think actually Ed and I both agree that the government does assist in creating jobs. It's got two ways to do that. One is by spending and one is by tax cuts. Really, that's what the true argument is what's the better way? And, you know, Romney in the debate talked about trickle-down government. That's his new favorite phrase. It's his way to answer the accusation that he's in favor of trickle-down economics, which is tax cuts for the rich. I wrote a piece the other day about this phrase, trickle-down government, because I could not for the life of me figure out what he was talking about. And I did a lot of research, and I found that actually it was a phrase that was invented by Alan Keyes back in 1988 in a debate with Paul Sarbanes. The basic idea is that government is, you know, can't create jobs, that it trickles down, and who knows whether it's going to create any stimulus or not. But the fact of the matter is there's broad agreement that government spending does help the economy. On the other hand, tax cuts is very hard to demonstrate. The tax cuts have provided much in the way of economic stimulus, increased savings, all sorts of things. There was a Congressional Research Service report issued about a month ago where they looked all the way back to 1945. They found it very hard to see any correlation. You know, the last time we had a big tax increase was the 1990s. The economy boomed.
All right, gentlemen, I want to try to get some agreement here very, very quickly in the last minute or so before we go. It is the case that 5 million jobs emerged over the last 4 years, call it created. They came from somewhere. Can we agree that whatever the president did or the economy did or, you know, the private sector did, that someone is responsible for creating 5 million jobs over the last 4 years? And it was on President Obama's watch. He's a job creator. Ed?
Yeah, well, I think it's dangerous to say whose watch, because on his watch we also lost 5 million jobs. So, you know, and I think Tim's the correlation issue, the job growth comes slowly over time, so I think it's hard to correlate in time. You go back to the 1990s, for example, and the NASDAQ went from 800 to 4,500. There was enormous increases in the payoff for risk-taking, enormous increases in equity. If anything, the 1990s show us that payoffs for risk-taking matter. So, you know, I think the way you have to judge the president is when you lose 5 million jobs, what has normally happened after that? We've had big rebounds. Now, I think we have more structural problems here. We're not going to get the same level of rebound perhaps we've gotten in the past, but I do believe that the government policies of very high spending, and I disagree with Tim that there's consensus on this, because I think economists over 50 tend to be Keynesian. They live in the old school. Economists under 50 live in a new school that came after Robert Lucas and rational expectations. Very few of them believe that government spending will stimulate growth in the economy. They believe that it's offset by reductions in the private sector.
So all right, Ed Conard, we're going to give Timothy Noah the last word here. Ed, thanks so much. Tim?
Look, it's a really simple story. The economy was in terrible shape when Obama came in. It's in somewhat better shape now. It's still not in very good shape, but there are more jobs.
All right, Timothy Noah, author of The Great Divergence, America's Growing Inequality Crisis and What We Can Do About It. He's a senior editor at The New Republic. Ed Conard is author of Unintended Consequences, Why Everything You Think You Know About the Economy is Wrong. Thanks so much for a lively discussion, gentlemen.
John, thank you.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.